Now, it's my pleasure to introduce Maud Barlow. She is a national chair of the Council of Canadians, founder of the Blue Planet Project, 2005 winner of the alternate Nobel Prize, and the recipient of Sweden's Right Livelihood Award, to name a few. Maud and the Council of Canadians have been noted across Canada for their support of publicly owned and operated regulated water and water services. Maud is also the director of the International Forum on Globalization. Please help me in welcoming Maud Barlow.
Thank you so much. Thank you so very much for this absolutely beautiful introduction and welcome. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Sue. Thank you to the Oceanside Coalition for Strong Communities. Thank you to all of the groups here. The Council of Canadians works very, very closely with the Canadian Union of Public Employees and many of the groups involved here, Kairos, equality groups around the country, and it's just a thrill to be here, and I thank you so much for that warm welcome, and I thank you so much for coming out tonight and being here. I've come to support you 100% in your fight against EPCOR, and I find it distressing to hear when I hear that, I mean, I find it good to hear that 92% of people on the island don't want your public services removed. But I also know, and I've been fighting this for quite a long time now, that doesn't matter one bit to the people who've decided to privatize your water. You have to understand, this has nothing to do with what you want. This has absolutely nothing to do with democracy. This is about the intention of some corporations and some private sector interests around the world to privatize every single drop of water in the world, every single drop of available fresh water, which is actually a very small amount of water systems. And I want you to know that. This is not a case of, well, if we just assert ourselves and show democratically that we want to keep water in the public sector, these companies will go away. That's not what's happening around the world. These companies don't care what you think. It's not about democracy. It's about their power. So we have to understand the nature of the struggle as we start it. I'm going to come back to your struggle here, but I wanted to start a little bit out in the world, if we could, and that is, I think it's important to put the work that you're doing here on Vancouver Island, because I can promise you the issues that you've got on French Creek and other places are just the beginning of a fight over your island's water resources. I can tell you now, it's just the first baby steps of a huge fight that we're going to have in years to come. And I want to kind of put it in a perspective of what's happening around the world. It's very important for us to see this as part of something very, very large and, in my opinion, part of the greatest environmental and human rights crisis of our times. There are two kind of concerns, if you will, or two parts to the concern around water in the world. The first is that we are actually running out of water. Now, that's not supposed to be able to happen, right? We all learned back in grade 2 or grade 8 or whatever that there's a closed hydrologic cycle, and there's a certain amount of finite amount of water, and it'll circulate through the environment and through the air and so on, and come down in the form of rain, and we use it, and it goes back up into the system. And you know what I think it's when you think about water, when you next walk out into the rain, which might be tonight, it's important to remember that not only is that water the same amount of water that was here at the beginning of the planet, but it's actually the same water. So some of the water that falls on you the next time it rains, just stop and think, was once circulating through the blood of dinosaurs. I mean, that's what the continuum is in our lives. But what we didn't understand, and what our teachers weren't able to tell us because they didn't know, is that it's possible to take that water, that very, very small percentage, it's less than 0.5% of all the world's water stock, and make it unusable. And what's happening around the world is that humanity is depleting, polluting, and diverting the surface water systems of the world so fast that it's running out of surface water. It's not that the water's not there, but it's not usable. or either because we're polluting it or perhaps we're taking it from somewhere like a large body of water and using it for corporate agribusiness. So we're spreading it out over fields. So we're taking it from a place that's accessible and putting it in a place that's not. We know that what's happened now then as a result of that, and I'll just give you two examples, China and India. 75% of India's surface waters and 80% of China's surface waters are so polluted that they're not usable for anything, fishing, cooking, drinking, anything. So we're using these huge bores, these industrial bores, and we're putting them down into the groundwater systems, the aquifers under the ground, and we're taking up groundwater faster than nature can replenish it, very much faster than nature can replenish it. And this is very, very recent. Only in the last 30, 40 years have we been able to access this water in a way that it's not like a farmer using a well. This is actually going into groundwater systems. One example would be the Ogallala Aquifer, which is considered probably the biggest in the world. It runs through under the American Midwest. They have 200,000 bores cycling water out of the aquifer 24/7, in 24 hours, 7 days a week. And depending on which study you look at, the aquifer is being depleted 8 to 14 times faster than it can be replenished. And nobody's arguing that it will come to an end, and it will come to an end, for some people feel it will come to an end sooner than anyone is ready for. And so the scientists talk about what they call hot stains, and that is that there are parts of the world that are actually running out. And I cannot say this strongly enough. It's not cyclical drought. The Middle East, northern China, where 400 of the 600 cities are now living in with serious drought, serious water scarcity. And this is because they've taken all the water that's used to be used to grow grain in the Chinese breadbasket, and they're diverting it to industry so that all your running shoes and shower curtain liners and everything else can be made there. This is to pay for their economic miracle. They are absolutely destroying the water tables of China. 22 countries in Africa, Mexico City, which is actually sinking in on itself, and the United States. And I want to take a few seconds on the United States because I want to return to the United States in terms of Canada. But it's very important that we understand that there is a huge water scarcity building up in the United States. Last year, the National Academies of Science and the U.S. Geological Survey put out a very powerful study, and they said that what's happening in the interior west of the United States is very, very, very frightening. They said that it's the driest it's been in 500 years, that it is not a cyclical drought, that they are, in fact, in far worse shape than they were in the 1930s, the only difference being after the crisis of the Dust Bowl years, they built in reservoir systems in order to save water in times between droughts. California, Idaho, Kentucky, Oregon, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, Florida are all in crisis. There's a new study from the University of Chicago that shows that demand in the Chicago Basin is going to dramatically increase. And there are those of us living around the Great Lakes who are very concerned with a new annex, a new proposal to remove new water diversions from the Great Lakes by the governors of the states that border the Great Lakes, and they're going to be taking massive new amounts of water from the Great Lakes. We look to the Aral Sea and say, you know, people say it couldn't happen here, but in fact, the drying up of a whole body of water could have, in fact, indeed happened. And it's getting worse. We know that the hot stains that the scientists talk about now also include, potentially, the removal of some of the actual water systems from the hydrologic cycle. So that's on one side is scarcity, and on the other side is water injustice or water inequality, because there are parts of the world and parts of the classes of the world that have all the water that they need, of course, and there are parts of the world that are going without. We have about 1.2 billion people in the world without access to clean water now, and it's getting worse. And of course, we know that most of those people live in the third world, and it is not just connected to places without water. In Latin America, for instance, there's so much fresh water that the allocation per capita should be the highest in the world. It's one of the lowest in the world. Because of massive pollution and massive inequality, some people have access to all they want, and many people have access to none. The United Nations, the World Bank, the Pacific Institute, the World Watch Institute all tell us that by 2020, 25 unless we dramatically change the current rate of depletion of our water systems, that two-thirds of the world's population will not have access to clean water. Of that, half will actually be living in a dire situation without any access whatsoever. Now, it's no surprise, then, that some private interests around the world have suddenly come to discover this. And this is all fairly recent in terms of their research was there in this part of the world, in this part of the world, in this part of the world, but it's only recently that scientists have begun to put this together as a global picture and are beginning to understand that it's possible to actually destroy the world's fresh water tables. So we think about running out of oil, but we can't imagine that we could run out of fresh water. In fact, we are running out of fresh water. And so these companies have discovered what I call blue gold, and that is that water is the most precious commodity and is going to become more precious and more rare in the future, and whoever controls it will be both powerful and wealthy. And there are several types of what I call water hunters, because I consider these folks to be a kind of predator on water. And I consider water, I agree with Roger, water is not like running shoes or cars. Water is necessary to life, and I deeply believe should be removed from the market system altogether. There's water services, which is what you're dealing with here in this community with EPCOR, and that is that there are three big companies, though. You're still dealing with the small potatoes to an extent, although these companies can get bought out. The three biggest are Suez, Vivendi, and RWE Thames. They're all European. They're huge. They have hundreds of thousands of employees. They're growing at a rate of about 10% a year. They're growing faster than the countries, the growth rate in most of the countries in which they operate. They are backed by the World Bank that now goes into developing countries and says, you know how we told you to privatize healthcare and how we told you to privatize education? If you wanted more structural adjustment funds or more funds to develop your programs, well, we're going to come in and tell you now that if you want any money for water services, you have to bring in one of these corporations. And the companies around from Africa, all through Asia, all through Latin America, there are huge fights going on against these corporations that have been in some countries for as long as 30 years, delivering water on what they call cost recovery, full cost recovery, which is, of course, meaning that they have to get not only all the money that they, or more specifically the World Bank, put up in return, but they have to get anywhere between a 10 and 20, in some cases 30% return of profit for their overseas investors. And the World Bank is now signing agreements with these corporations, actually promising them that whether they make this money or not, the World Bank is still going to guarantee them this kind of profit. These people are thugs. I will give you one example. I've got dozens and dozens. I just got back from Bolivia in the spring. Bolivia has had a number of water wars. The most recent is that Suez, the big French company that built the Suez Canal, is given the right, the contract through the World Bank to deliver water to the people of La Paz, which is the capital of Bolivia. Now, Bolivia is the poorest country in Latin America, 75% indigenous. There's communities in the hills around La Paz called El Alto. And Suez came in and it signed an agreement that it would deliver water to everybody, not just to the rich. It promised, this was in the contract, and it signed a contract that it would bring in infrastructure, put millions and millions of dollars into infrastructure and build a wastewater treatment so that pollution wouldn't be as rampant in the communities. What they've done, and I've been there, I've seen it with my own eyes, they have built a great big plant under a mountain, under a snowmelt. And they literally take the snow melt coming off this mountain as if they somehow produced it, worked hard and produced this snow, and they get to make money from it. And they have a very crude device of just separating the runoff from the twigs and the dirt and the rocks and so on, because there's no chemicals they have to worry about. And that's what the local indigenous community gets to take, and there are 200,000 of them with absolutely no access to water. And they pipe the good water that comes off, the clean water that they've now cleaned off through this process in a huge pipe, and they sell it to people who can afford it in La Paz, and they are not selling it to anyone who has not got the money. And there are children dying in these communities because they have suddenly been cut off water that was their water for centuries and centuries. They also did not put in their infrastructure. They built kind of canals through the poorer parts of the city, and they're just throwing the garbage and the raw sewage, and in one particular canal I saw the filth from the abattoirs, local abattoirs, and they're going directly through people's communities. I was there, I saw it, I saw dogs eating food from the abattoir rivers going right into Lake Titicaca, which is a World Heritage Site and one of the most beautiful places on God's earth. Which will be destroyed, they say, within 3 years. I was so angry with what I saw there. I was so breathlessly angry. I had a British television crew following me around, and I said, what's happening here is murder. Suez is committing murder here. And he turned the camera off, and he said, would you like to rephrase that? And I said, unless you can think of a stronger way that I could put it. Actually, no. Like he said, we'll see if our lawyers let it get through, and I am very much hoping that the lawyers let it get through, because we have to name what this is that we're dealing with. That's one kind of theft, and it's all over the place, by the way. These companies are in real trouble in the developing world because there has been such a fabulous fight back, and I'll talk to you about the exciting fight back in a minute, but now they're moving into North America. I was just in Lexington, Kentucky, where RWE took over the local water system, raised the rates. The company is totally now controlled by a German, or their local water supply is controlled by a German conglomerate that doesn't care at all about the people in Lexington. So it was kind of interesting to hear people in the United States saying the same kind of thing that people in Bolivia were saying, and feeling taken over by these, you know, corporate interests from far away, and feeling that their democratic rights have been taken away. And I thought, you know, we have a lot more in common with ordinary Americans. It's the elites of our countries that are giving us grief, and it was just a very interesting kind of observation for me to see. Then there's bottled water. And bottled water is a huge and growing and very unregulated industry. There are three big companies. The big three are Nestle, which owns about 78 companies, including Perrier and San Pellegrino. I bet you think San Pellegrino comes from a lovely little spring in Italy somewhere. It's more likely to come from Lake Michigan, you know. And they're hunters. Nestle is a very strong hunter. And then Coca-Cola and Pepsi, who are both producing water as fast as they can. They take tap water. These companies do not take spring water. They put it through what they call their secret reverse osmosis process and add their secret mineral packet, and they sell it back to you at almost 2,000 times what it would have cost you to come out of to drink it out of the tap. And there have been studies that show that it's not only not particularly safer, in many cases it's less regulated or more unregulated than the tap water you're getting out of your tap. But what's so dangerous about this is that last year we put close to 100 billion liters of water in plastic bottles around the world. And those plastic bottles, those containers are being thrown into wetlands and, you know, our oceans and our lakes, and in huge piles, again, shipped to the third world, or who the hell cares what happens to them, and where they leach their toxins, because plastic is toxins and